Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to the Poetry Exchange.
I'm Fiona Bennett.
And I'm Michael Schaefer. We're going to get straight into the conversation this week, which completes the trio of conversations that we held in the John Rylands Library in Manchester.
We were delighted to have the opportunity to meet and talk with actress Maxine Peake about the poem that's been a friend to her. And we're really grateful to her for giving us her time and indeed her permission to share this conversation with you. You'll be hearing myself and Michael talking with her about Turns by Tony Harrison, the poem that's been a friend to Maxine.
Again, do you not think Huddersfield Manchester sees itself as an intellectual city? Does, you know, right. I don't know, and there is, we've got, and when you think of what has come out of Manchester, what you know, politically, industrial, everything, it's such a, I remember Stuart McCorney saying, he was on his radio show and somebody said to him, oh, when BBC moved to Manchester, but I mean, what's Manchester got? And he reeled off this list of famous inventors and thinkers from Manchester. People went, oh my God,
didn't know.
But I suppose I don't know.
And also what's happening now. I mean, the contemporary work as well. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, but it is amazing.
Yeah.
Turns. Is it Turns?
It's Turns, yes.
Turns, and it's by
Tony Harrison.
Tony Harrison, okay, great. Do you mind reading it through for us?
Yeah.
We've got it in the room a bit more then.
I thought it made me look more working class, as if a bit of checkered cloth could bridge that gap. I did a turn in it before the glass. My mother said, it suits you, your dad's cap. She preferred me to wear suits and part my hair. You're every bit as good as that lot are. All the pension queue came out to stir. Dad was sprawled beside the postbox, still VR. His cap turned inside up beside his head, smudged H-A-H in purple Indian ink and brill cream slicks displayed so folk might think he wanted charity for dropping dead. He never begged for nought. Death's reticence crowns his life. And me, I'm opening my trap to bust the class that broke him for the pence that splash like brackish tears into our cap.
Great, thank you. Wow.
I really got, when you read it, the a rhythm thing, or there's something about the sounds of the words in the mouth that I didn't get just reading it in my head, especially in that last line. I'm opening my trap to busk the class that broke him for the pence that splash like brackish tears into our cap. It's brilliant.
It's not exactly... What can I say? It's not a gentle friend.
No.
You know what I mean? But when he's, I just thought, well, it's funny because some friendships aren't always comforting friendships. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But there's something about it that it has... Yeah. I discovered it sort of in my teens, really.
Do you remember the moment you first...
Yeah, it was a friend, actually. I had a friend called Ellen Evans, and her dad used to work for the council, and we used to think he was... Well, he was very clever, but he was sort of the first friend's parents I knew that had been to university. So her dad had been to university.
Right.
And he introduced us all to, like, films. Like, I remember he said to me, I think you'll like this film called With Nail and I, and a film called Performance. So he got us all into... things that, you know, there's two books in our house. One was a Who's Who, that I don't know where that had come from. Another book was Emma VIP, which was a story about a chocolate-coloured Labrador, blind dog, that my mum really liked.
Yeah.
So I had this friend, Ellen, and her and her sister, Beth, were very clever, and I was always a bit in awe of them.
Yeah.
And I remember him saying to me, I think you're like Tony Harrison's work. So I sort of, you know, sought it out.
Wow.
And there was just this... Because I had a really, really great relationship with my grandfather. He was my step-grandfather.
Mm.
He used to wear a cap. So initially, that's why it just spoke to me. It was just the thing about him and his... He wouldn't leave the house without his cap on. But what's interesting about Tony Harrison's relationship with his father, it's very different. I had a great relationship with my granddad, and he was in the Communist Party, and he was very educated. You know, he'd self-educated himself. You know, he worked at Leyland Motors. But it is about... I suppose it's about the imagery and it's about the identity of working class and actually how that, for me, it's how it holds you back. And when I first read this poem, it wasn't going to hold me back. my class because I was going to go out and go to London and sort of leave it all behind, naively. And that hasn't happened. It's completely dragged, you know, it's dragged me back kicking and screaming. And it, in a strange way, it sort of keeps, it reminds me how I used to be, I don't think I was arrogant, but because I thought I was so sort of well-read and slightly cleverer than quite a few, you know what I mean? That I wasn't, I don't know what to say, I wasn't going to come back to the North and I was going to leave and that would be it, you know, when I was 18, I was going to go and not come back because I was too big for this place. And actually now I come back and I don't feel that, and I feel really, I remember in drama school, one of the teachers saying to me, you won't, when you go back, it'll be very difficult for you, Maxine, because you won't feel like you fit anymore. You'll have changed and your friends won't. And I remember going home and going, oh no, that's not true. And I need to come home and I need to see my friends. And that was a big sort of wake-up call. So it's that strange, for me, it's about the strange relationship I have with my class, which sort of identifies me, and I've let it really be my identity sometimes, and sometimes it can be a bit suffocating.
Yeah.
Because I am, you know, Northern comes before anything. You know, when people say, oh, she's Northern actress, Lancashire actress. You know, so it's that love-hate thing. But it's just, I don't know. I mean, I know Tony Harrison's sort of Northumberland, he's further sort of northeast, but it just, family, generation, location, how it really sort of, how it just define you, if you let it.
Turns. I thought it made me look more working class, as if a bit of checkered cloth could bridge that gap. I did a turn in it before the glass. My mother said, it suits you, your dad's cap. She preferred me to wear suits and part my hair. You're every bit as good as that lot are.
And it's great, that first verse is just, it's got all that contradiction that you're talking about as well, about whether you own it or it, you know, whether it, you know, in a sense, that identity thing of whether it's a cage or a thing that actually is your drive in some way as well, or your belonging, you know. Because if you kind of run away from it, then where do you belong is difficult, isn't it?
Yeah. But it is as well, it's that and the feels the weight of even though my granddad was very sort of educated, I remember him saying to me, you'll never be an actress, you're not self-centred enough. Little did he know. But, you know, there was, even though they wanted you, there was still that, it was, you know, Maxine, you know, when I got in at Raj, he went, for God's sake, don't say you live on a council estate. It was fear. I think he was frightened that if I moved out of that, that I would, don't know, even get picked on or get laughed at, or just feel I'm not in. So in a way, even though I adore him, I still felt he's instilled me with, I've not, and I always think Tony Harrison's, even though he writes a lot about it, he's, you know, he sort of did break away. And, but I never had that, maybe courage of convictions to really, I don't know if it's cowardice or, I don't know.
Oh, I love that this is still with you though, that conversation that you're having that happened then is still happening and this poem is still kind of speaking with you with it.
But it just always sort of remind, you know, and it's like that thing, because when I sort of chose, I thought, well, is friend the right thing? But I thought, because sometimes friends remind you, don't they, that about, I don't know, a good friend, that's always the conversations I have with friends, or should we tell them, we think friends, you know, should we tell them the truth, or should we say what we feel about their behaviour? And sometimes I feel I'm not a good friend because I don't remind people or just prick people about, because I think, oh no, I don't want to upset them, I don't want them to feel that I'm, but this, I suppose that's why it's a good friend, because it does keep reminding me. And I suppose as well, it was that thing when I was younger, I always sort of gravitated more towards sort of male poets, although I sort of see myself as, you know, although I've got labelled as being a feminist now, which sometimes, I mean, I am, but it became, before I'd even said it, all of a sudden it was like, Maxine, I was like, well, I never saw it like that. I just saw it as I, you know, I do what I want to do, and nobody's going to sort of stop me, especially not men, you know. And to be honest, I've always said, I'm first and foremost, I'm a socialist. Mm. When I was young, it's really strange, I just believe in equality for everybody. When did just sort of being a woman and speaking your mind make you a... It sort of reflects our times, I think, that how we've slid backwards. Mm. So, yeah, I don't know. I've got lots of labels that I sort of... Sometimes I feel they do... I feel weighed down by them. But I think that... Somebody said to me the other day, but she was in a bit ambassador, she said, I think you've taken on your granddad's role and you feel now he's gone that you have to... So there's something...
Mm.
It's that, although I adored my granddad, I do feel I've let, although he'd be going, if he was alive now, he'd be going mad, going, keep your mouth shut. Because he got sacked from so many jobs and got blacklisted and in so much trouble over his politics.
Mm.
So he used to say to me, button it, don't. Mm. You know, and I said, well, I can't not.
Mm.
But I think it's that, there's something about his poem as well, it's the haunting of other I don't know.
Mm.
And it is, you know, that lovely image of, you know, even though it's a, you know, of his father and the fact that his class did break him.
Mm.
And I think it's broken,
maybe
it's, I feel a bit fractured by it in a different, you know, the next generation in a different way.
All the pension queue came out to stare. Dad was sprawled beside the postbox. Still VR. His cap turned inside up beside his head, smudged HAH in purple Indian ink, and Brill Cream slicks displayed so folk might think he wanted charity for dropping dead.
But it's amazing that thing when it sounds like your step-granddad, you know, had that thing of really... It's a very particular kind of love where they don't want you to kind of lose out in the way that they've lost out potentially or not. And yet, you know, that's a very conflicted kind of thing.
Well, then he was a real diehard communist, and his thing was about, he hated competition and ambition, and he used to say to me, you're ambitious. And he used to go, and I remember once an ex-boyfriend having a massive row with him about competition because my granddad was like, he didn't believe in it at all. And he didn't believe in ambition, you know. And I never sort of believed he was lying. I never felt he ever wanted to do anything other than, you know, but for somebody who... And his friends used to say, he was one of the best politicians we've ever met. He should have done something with it. He was so knowledgeable, but there was no... But I think, in a way, that thing of him being true, sort of... You become a slave to your beliefs, don't you? And what does that mean? Does it stop you doing...
Yeah, what do we commit to
in
our lives is a big question, isn't it?
Well, it's things would come in and I go, how much for that voice over? And I go, what's it for? And I go, I can't do it. And I've set the stall out now, I just couldn't. You know, and I remember Grandad saying, I joined the Communist Party when I was 18. And I waited till I was 18 because he said to me, I don't want you to join. He said, it'll kill you. He said, I've seen it kill friends of mine. I went, what do you mean? He said, because it's all or nothing. But yeah, and then I sort of went, oh, I'll be fine. And then, yeah, sort of, I definitely know what he means now.
Mm. So when did your step-granddad
No,
die?
He died 3 years ago now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. But do you feel like he, I mean, yeah, how was it with him? When you'd sort of gone off and done.
I'm sure. I mean, I think he was proud. He always used to say to friends of mine, is she any good? Because I can't tell. You know? Because he said, because I can't. And he used to say, can you not get a part where you smile more? Because you've got a lovely smile.
He never begged for nought. Death's reticence crowns his life's. And me... I'm opening my trap to busk the class that broke him for the pence that splash like brackish tears into our cap.
Can I just ask about what your relationship with it is, just in a kind of physical way now? So would you Would you read it again?
Yeah, would you? It's funny, I read it and it really, I got really upset, I suppose, because my granddad's not here now. Mm. So when I sort of dug it out again and read it, you know, I've not read it for a while, and and now I've got his cap, actually. It's in the spare room, and my friend Betty Tebbs, who's 98 and an activist, she gave me this very strange sort of bust of this woman with a flower in her head. And she always used to say to me, she's from Manchester, and she does a lot with CND and stuff, but she always used to say to me, can I have your granddad's phone number? And he used to go, oh, my bloody dead body, are you giving her my phone number? So I've got this strange sort of bust that Betty said she painted herself of this woman, like a flowery thing, and then my granddad's cap. That's on there, and it does still really smell of him, and it is that, and I just love that image now as well. Go, I can see that image. I mean, that's obviously his initials, but the, you know, the little patch, Dun & Co patch inside that with the plastic, that's, you know, and it's a bit oily, and it's a bit, yeah. And very strangely, and I'm not into, but I had some friends who's, and this is really strange, and I don't know, she wouldn't look at a picture of my granddad. It freaked her out too much. But I had a friend who, we went on holiday for a week, and two friends of mine, sorry, no, really quick, they were planning on moving in together. And I said, well, look, we're going away for a week. Why don't you just stay in our house for a week and see how you get on? Because they were living in separate flats. And then when I came back, Pooley, the guy said to me, he said, Susie's got something to ask you. She went, oh, no, I really don't want. And I went, what? And she said twice I went into your room, and she said, I know I'm a bit strange and I do see things. She said, but I saw this little man sat in the chair in the corner. And I said, what did he look like? She said, he just fit the chair perfectly. She said, he had his legs crossed. I'm going to start crying. She said, he had a tie on and a V-neck jumper. And I went, oh my God. I said, that's my granddad. I said, I don't believe any of that. I said, can I show? She went, I don't want to. She said, but he had a lovely energy and had a big smile. And she said, and twice. Now, Susie's, she's seen, you know, some people, I don't know quite, you know, I haven't got any, whatever that is. It doesn't. Mm. But yeah, it was just really interesting. But she wouldn't, because she said it had frightened her too much. I said, I'll show you a picture of my granddad, and it's, you know, it's just that, I mean, I don't know, it's just because the cat was, I don't know, it's an energy, it's something, you know, I don't believe in, but she'd never met him, she'd never seen him, but I just, again, about that, I suppose about the energy, it's like Pav said, well, my fella said, you know, he's still very much in this house, isn't he, you know, because he's very much with you, and, you know, so...
Very much with you.
Yeah.
Just really.
I'm really glad I asked about that because I've been wondering about the cap. So
yeah, no.
Now I know where it is, which is really great.
Yeah, I've got. Yeah, it's the next. So we're going to get it framed and put it on the wall, but it's just on. I
think it sounds good where it is.
Just on Betty's little. Yeah.
Sounds really good where it is.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
No, it's a pleasure. Thank you. It's been great.
Really lovely to meet you.
No, lovely to meet you.
Amazing to hear about this.
It's made me want to cry.
This poem.
It's just really, yeah. What a great, it's such a, because from, isn't it amazing? The freedom a poem can give you, and it's not necessarily about, you know, what exactly the poem is saying. It's what the poem says to you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you did bring, whatever the route might have been, that you did bring this one that isn't such a, obvious comforting friend, but is that more kind of reminder, kind of calling you on it, being with you with whatever that ongoing debate is kind of friend? Because I think that's one of the things for me about the idea of poems as friends, is that it's, yeah, of course there are fantastic ones that are about reassuring or reaffirming, or, but it's that idea of friendship being a kind of place of witness and honesty and challenge and all those other things as well, which I really love. So I love it that you brought this one.
Oh, thank you.
This kind of friend.
Turns. I thought it made me look more working class, as if a bit of checkered cloth could bridge that gap. I did a turn in it before the glass. My mother said, "It suits you, your dad's cap." She preferred me to wear suits and part my hair. "You're every bit as good as that lot are." All the pension queue came out to stare. Dad was sprawled beside the postbox, still VR. His cap turned inside up beside his head, smudged HAH in purple Indian ink, and Brill Cream slicks displayed so folk might think he wanted charity for dropping dead. He never begged for nought. Death's reticence crowns his life's, and me, I'm opening my trap to busk the class that broke him for the pence that splash like brackish tears into our cap.
That was Michael with the gift recording of Turns by Tony Harrison.
Oh, thanks again to Maxine, to Tony Harrison and to Faber for their permission in allowing us to use the poem and to share the conversation.
We'd love to hear from you. So you can do that in a number of ways. If you head over to the website, you'll find the sort of usual contact details there for email and so on. There's also the means there to leave us a voicemail. So do give us a call. It's all completely free. And wherever possible, in fact, well, every time, we'll get back to you. So no reason not to leave us a message. You might want to tell us about how you found the podcast this week or about a poem that's been a friend to you. Anything you want. We'd just really love to hear from you.
You can find a link on the description page that will take you to more of Tony Harrison's work if you'd like to investigate that.
And if you haven't pressed subscribe on your podcast platform, do go ahead and do that, because it just means that as and when we've got either a new episode to share with you or other kind of audio messages to send via the podcast, they're going to come to you automatically.
We'll be back with more Poems as Friends. But for now, thank you for listening.